Hi there, and welcome to today's podcast, where I'm joined by the, I'm not sure I was going to say famous Judith Lewis, but infamous, famous Judith Lewis. We have Judith on. Thank you very much for joining me today, Judith. It is a pleasure.
Thank you very much for having me. Gosh.
Have you? Yeah, I've had a few females on. I've always been scared to ask. I've always got this fear, although I keep saying this to you. You scare me, but you've never done anything bad. You've always been overly nice, but you're just one of those women I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can ask her to come on. But you agreed to come on, and we got there. And I don't know why I think that of you, but you just have this, I don't know, it's a...
The fact that I have, you know, hit men on my WhatsApp, it's just like...
But...
And you know... You never know if I'm joking about something like that.
Yeah. I never know when you're joking at all, full stop. That's why even earlier, prior to coming on the webinar, Judith's like, I can't hear you. And I'm like, she's fucking with me. Right now she's fucking around. But nah, as I say, I always one of the nicest people I've come across in this industry. So I've no idea why I've got that fear factor, but... Hey-ho, I've got to be honest with things. I just wouldn't be messing you around, put it that way, Judith. You just look as if you take no prisoners. And that's a great thing. That is also a great thing as well. So I'm sure I'm not the first person to say that, surely.
What, that I take no prisoners? No, I only take slaves. But, you know, other than that. I think it's because I've been around since, for a long time. I got online in the 80s. So I was programming back in the 80s. And I think you had to really cultivate a particular persona. If you think about it, 1985, I started working in a computer lab and it was 100% male. And then I walked in and the teasing was robust. But as a 15-year-old girl, you don't see it that way. You see it as being picked on rather than guys who really, really are exceptionally turned on by you, wanting to get out of the situation by teasing you. I was ruthlessly teased as a child, as a teen. And just in order to stay in computing, I cultivated a persona. My little sister scares me more than me. So I would say that she works in QA in the Canadian nuclear industry, I believe. I believe it's QA. Like, she'll kill you if you sign off the wrong kind of insulation. So she's scarier than me, if you can imagine.
Ooh, I don't want to. You are the scariest woman in SEO, but as you say, you've been in this industry, or I know you've been in computing and everything else, but in digital marketing for 25 plus years, which is obscene. So you must have started in digital marketing when you were like 3 years old or something like that.
I love you so much. Thankfully, I have no children. That's why I have no gray hair or very little gray hair.
I was going to make another joke, but again, because of that scary thing, I'm like, no, make it a nice joke thing. But no, 25 years in this industry is a long, long time. You know, I think you must be in there with all of the other guys, you know, back from the very, very beginning. And some of these guys are still going strong. But I was just looking through your speaking and PR stuff. Even your speaking events and everything else are going back to 2007, which is just...
Yep.
Madness. And and obviously you're a well-known speaker around the world. You do consultancy training, but what I really do like, and I think I would consider myself one of these guys as well, like obviously in the era that we all started, although you started before me and all that stuff, we had to do everything. So obviously your services and everything else, you're not just a speaker who does a bit of tech SEO or something like that. You basically have come from a place where you had to do everything in the beginning, which is pretty much why I would consider myself a good all-rounder, because we had to dabble in all of this kind of stuff. And obviously looking at the kind of services or what you do. You know, you're pretty much doing everything, including social media, outreach, training, consultancy. You're covering the full amount. And that is, again, still reasonably hard to keep on top of and keep up to date with all of that kind of stuff, because you could just be the social media person. And that's something we were speaking about prior to coming on. You know, there's that many different little quirks there that you could just be solely focused on that. So what is your favorite topic out of all of the stuff you do anyway?
I think the one that engages the most people is link building, because they always have questions and there's a lot of misinformation out there and a ton of articles that are actually complete bullshit that people will read and take as gospel. And so link building is one of those topics that I'm really keen about, because I dispel a lot of myths. And you were with me and Ross when we were talking about link building, and someone came and said on Twitter to me afterwards, that was the most amount of sense I have ever heard spoken about link building before. So I think that's fun, because you can dispel a lot of myths, but also teach people a lot. But I also really like talking about how search works, because that's also a little bit of a black box for people. They accept that Google does stuff, but they really don't dig into it. And I think this is where Don Anderson really stands out, head and shoulders, absolutely above the crowd. I am not even close to being in her league. She studies stuff to the level that a Google engineer would, and has knowledge of the way that search indexing, library sciences type stuff that a Google engineer would have. So I think not to that level, but understanding how search works, why it works, and then how people think, and therefore why they search the way they do, which ties into like keyword research, and also how you structure your website. And I have an open slide deck right next to me that I'm working on for a client, which is talking about exactly that, because we need to understand the searcher to deliver them the search result that we want them to click on. And right now it's not quite there. So they've brought me in to help them out on that. So I really enjoy everything, but like talking strategy, talking link building, talking research, and talking just understanding search are sort of the four things that I really enjoy, because you get so many questions and you can help people in so many ways. But also, always fun, client disaster stories.
Client disaster stories is I love that stuff. And I was starting to make a few videos prior to lockdown, just stupid things with clients, just stupid things you've come across. And I was wanting to do like make it even bigger, just like crazy big stories and stuff like that. And I might also go back to it. But what is your most outrageous client disaster story that you've had?
My favorite was, I had a client that flew me out to America, to a particular city in America, picked me up, took me out, had me in to do an analysis. I met their devs. I looked at what they were doing. This is back in the days before Google could deal with Ajax. Even Hashbang dealing with Ajax was not good. They struggled. And they flew me out. They did all this stuff. They had me talk to the devs. They asked me what my opinion was. I presented them with a really big paper on why they needed to stop doing what they were doing and rethink their entire strategy. They took it. They paid me. They tipped me. They took me to my favorite chocolate shop. It was an amazing experience. And then I left. And I was like, okay, you've got my advice. About 4 months later, they contacted us again, the agency that I was working with, and said, so we've lost 50% of our traffic. We need you to come in and tell us why. So I looked at their website and I was like, I don't even need to do a report. I don't need to charge you for this. You did exactly what I told you not to do. You did the exact opposite of what I told you to do. Everything was the exact opposite. So you lost all your Google search traffic because Google can't see you anymore. And they were like, okay, but we need to pay you for a proper piece. So again, I wrote up a whole piece. They flew me out there. I presented to the board. I explained what went wrong, why they lost. And this is in the tens of millions of visits normally, why they lost 50% of their traffic, and presented them. And then they took me out again, and they took me to my favorite chocolate shop again. And then I flew back and I was like, well, that was great. But you know, like, they're not going to do anything with that. And it took them another year and a half before they were able to undo the damage that launching a website I had told them not to do it that way in dealt to their business. So their business really suffered as a result. But luckily, they were underpinned by a much larger business that basically floated them after they fucked up until they repaired what they did. But that was, if they hadn't have had that backup and had done that, it would have sunk their business.
Oh, man. That's obscene. And I think we spoke about it briefly one day last week. It's just people don't take action. You could give them all of these plans and all of that stuff, and in reality, just go away and do it. Just stop fucking around and talking about it and having 500 meetings to talk about doing some of this stuff. Just give it to a dev or give it to an SEO guy and just, you know, to get those bare basics done. And I think for me, I still pinch myself because when it comes to SEO, I just try and do the basics right, and then I'll play around with some other stuff, and that's it. And sometimes I'm like, man, why is no one else doing this? And I pinch myself going, am I really good at SEO, or are people just not doing the basics? And in all honesty, I think people are just not doing the basics in a lot of cases. And you know, obviously I've got a bit of persistency and consistency, you know, with blogging or whatever it may be, or adding content and building links. But sometimes, honestly, I pinch myself going, I cannot believe I'm in this industry and I've somehow became good at it. You know, I'm not some rocket scientist, you know, and, you know, you mentioned Don Anderson, someone who has educated themselves to an obscene level, which, you know, again, I could never consider myself close to the level of geekiness and you know, commitment and everything that Don does, which is amazing. And so I pinch myself going, man, I'm ranking with these people. How is that even possible? But as you say, and I've said for many years, people are just not even doing the basics right. And you know, I think that is a massive flaw within our industry. People talk too much and don't take action. And I often see people as well saying things like, how can, you know, and not just about me, I've seen it about, people probably said it about you or a leader, how can these people talk all the time and find time to do any work? They don't understand the art of automation, delegation, outsourcing and all that kind of stuff. So I think our industry is very much in its infancy, although, you know, people like yourself have done it for 25 years, you've traveled the world and been able to do it all while still making good money. But I want to talk a bit about you. So obviously you've worked for agencies, you do your own thing now, you have clearly done, you've probably had your fingers in so many things in this industry, affiliates and all of that kind of stuff. You know, do you still dabble in affiliates, or have you got any kind of any surprising things? Because I'll tell you why I asked. I had no idea Fernando from Semrush had a really successful side hustle away from Semrush. For years and years and years, I just thought Fernando's just a speaker. So have you got anything that we don't know about? You don't obviously have to tell what the niche is or anything like that, but I'd be curious to know if you're like, yeah, I do reasonably well. I've got a big e-com store or an affiliate site or whatever. Have you got anything like that?
I actually have no debt, so I have no impetus to do anything, because I had a very successful e-com store on top of working and stuff like that. And I think because also I worked in high tech and husband worked in high tech, we earned really good salaries. So we ended up with, well, no kids helps, no debt. But we ended up in a place where we could just literally retire and kind of live off of what we've done. But what's the fun in that? That's no fun. Yeah. I was talking this morning with somebody about, I was so tempted to get back into affiliates because I could see people doing really good work with like good big PBNs. And I think the B in PBNs is kind of a misnomer, but I could see that there's, you know, there's a lot out there that it's underutilized, and there are only a few really big players that seem to be really pushing the limits now. So seems like it would be a fun place to invest, but a lot of what I'm doing on the side is actually just for fun. So I've got a blog about chocolate, which I started to get free chocolate and that worked. I've got Instagram about my travels and I get free trips, free hotel stays, things like that. That worked. I've got a new Instagram about afternoon teas. I get free afternoon teas. So that worked. A lot of what I do is just for shits and giggles. I don't actually do it to make a lot of money. But yeah, I've got side hustles for money and side hustles for fun besides the consultancy. But how else am I supposed to test stuff? So if I want to throw a bunch of shitty links at a website, if I'm not actively maintaining something that has rankings and that has value, how am I supposed to test whether or not I've just killed it or not? If I have some little shitty WordPress blog on WordPress.com or whatever, how am I supposed to make sure that the what I'm trying to break did break, or what I'm trying to break failed because it isn't a bad tactic anymore? Like when I was testing comment spam, I saw my rankings shoot right up. And that was the only, like I do stuff in isolation when I do tests. And that was the only thing I changed was comment spam. So and I'm not saying to spam comments, kids, just say no. But the comment spam worked. And it worked to move the rankings of the very specific articles that I had placed on there with no other links in order to get the rankings to move. So, and they were aged articles. They weren't new. So if I don't have stuff like that sitting in the wings waiting to happen, I can't properly test what I'm testing, especially in the realm of links. And now with Google saying they won't penalize shitty links coming in from places, you always want to just check to see if that's still correct. And it's not. There is suppressions that are still possible for certain types of bad links. But hacked site links, I haven't had them move the needle in a while. They used to. But now if you've got a link, well, it would be a bunch of links on a bunch of hacked sites because of the way Google assesses the internal page on that site. It no longer passes any value. So it's not really worthwhile.
It's refreshing to hear, though, that someone with your experience is still testing shit. And I think that's really good to hear. You know, you're not just, you know, and I'm not saying anyone in particular, but some of the older guys just do not. They're just like set in their ways and they're just like, no, that doesn't work. There's no way it works. And you're like, dude, it fucking does work. Like, what the fuck? So I think obviously that mindset of still testing, even after 25 years and, you know, doing your stuff and you've still got that hunger to test, because it's probably easy just to probably stick to your old ways and maybe not. Clearly you wouldn't be as successful. But that's what I really like about you as well. I think, the first impression I ever had of you was you were more white hat. Now, I don't know why I got that impression, just maybe because of the kind of circle that you frequently hang around with, you know, the London crowd who are doing all agency stuff and PR stuff and stuff like that. But then obviously when you meet you in person and you talk about dirty link tricks and you know, stuff that back in the day that you've maybe done and stuff like that, which is amazing. But I think you do hide that well. You know, you give off this vibe of being like a clean white hat do-gooder. I just love the deviousness of trying all the other stuff out as well. But where do you keep up to date? Like, for someone like yourself, again, you know, you're traveling, you're doing conferences and stuff like that, but where do you keep up to date with your knowledge of what to test, you know, what's working now? Like, is it a forum? Is it on your travels, networking at the bars? You know, where does someone experience pick up all this stuff?
A little bit by osmosis. So definitely at the bar, definitely on my travels, definitely reading tweets. Sometimes people will make a throwaway tweet. And I think one of my assets is my rather large brains. Clearly that's why I've got extra chest space. It's for the extra brains. I use those extra brains to good use, because I'll take different pieces of opinion and conjecture and actual fact, and I will meld them together and knit them together and find a narrative test the narrative. If it works, then I know it's not necessarily something someone said. I haven't had somebody like, I don't know, Mikkel Demib, who I haven't seen for years and is now making pottery. He was, you know, one of the older SEOs on the circuit and speaking for a long time. And it's not like he's come along and said, you know, for the past 25 years, I've never told anyone, but this works. No one in our circles ever says that. If we know something works, we very rarely will share it if it's a really, really key piece of information. So I have bits of information I'm unlikely to share. One, because to try to share it in a tweet or in a blog post or anything like that, there's so much going on in my brain at any one time that even when I just try to communicate with the devs, they'll say, what, do you mean this? And I'll be like, no, how could you have taken that assumption out of that statement? And it's because there's so much extra information in my brain that is contextualized what I've just said that no one else seems to have, that it makes it super difficult to communicate something that could go horribly, disastrously wrong. I loved your article about testing the click service, you know, when you mm-hmm. pay for clicks. I've loved testing that. On my tests, it didn't really work for me for the aged posts that I had tried to manipulate the rankings of, but I loved your testing of it, and that's something that I will definitely be testing again. And so it's stuff like that where I've just come across that, and I'm going to do some testing as well myself, just for fun, to see if it works. It's not something I'd ever do with a client, though.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily pay for clicks.
Nah, it's but with the click thing, what I'm finding, and I'm still playing around with stuff, I've still never found the perfect solution, but mobile proxies work best, because I think, you know, with all the other crap out there, it's just not doing the damage. And I think we're now on to Android emulators using mobile proxies and trying to play around with that stuff, which is weird. But in terms of Google search, you know, I have tried every CTR bot out there and on Google, and it really does struggle. What I do find those bots do work really well for would be the likes of YouTube and stuff like that. So the algorithms maybe not as clever or whatever you want to call it, but yeah, I'm hoping that we can do a bit more on the Android emulators and get the needle to move a little bit more with the Google stuff, and obviously start to then be able to manipulate the Google Suggest and all that kind of stuff as well, just for shits and giggles. I'm not even sure why I'm doing it, but as you say, sometimes it's just fun to tell these kind of things. But going back to link building, I'd love to hear, you know, what if you've got a campaign or a project sitting in front of you, you've just been hired in as the consultant or the person to implement some of this stuff. When it comes to link building, you know, it's the topic that everyone always asks about, which is why I'm going back to it. Everyone's still not got half a brain in how this works, but I'd love to know just roughly, obviously, what your steps are like. You know, does it start with outreach? How much PR do you mix in? Do you buy guest posts? Do you use tiers underneath them? And what are those tiers that are underneath it? Is it niche edits? Is it SAPE? Is it PBNs? What is going on? Just out of curiosity, so that we get what you think works, you know, from a link building perspective. So can you give us a bit of an overview of what your kind of strategy is like there?
Sure. First of all, it will vary depending on the industry. So I'm weirdly more likely to play fast and loose outside of the casino industry these days than inside it. And I think the reason why click farm type activity works on YouTube versus Google is Google has had to be a lot more sophisticated in the way that it attacks things and counters manipulation, especially when we think about it, we're coming into an election year, or we are in an election year, we're coming into election month. So it really has to be very careful because it is a monopoly.
Yeah,
I know Bing, it works very hard at their share of market, but Google's a monopoly, and if they fuck up, they actually do influence elections. They influence the stock price. So I know that the algorithm's tighter on Google. So I will, first of all, make sure that I go in and make sure that the site is sound technically. If the site's not technically sound, screw it. All the link building in the world isn't really going to move the needle enough, especially if you've got crawl issues or if you've got 17 articles optimized for the same topic. And again, I've got a client right now I'm working with. I'm like, if you want to rank for this keyword and you would rank really well at 135,000 searches a month, you could take a portion of that, but you're not going to, because you've got 6 articles, all of which are about the same level of strength, and they're all optimized towards this keyword. It makes no sense. You need to fix that. So that's the first thing to do, really, before you do any link building, is make sure that, you know, your shit's in order. Then the way that I approach link building is half black hat, half white hat, so to speak. It's a mix of bought and earned. I have a group of bloggers that I work with regularly. Sometimes they'll give me freebies. A lot of times we have an agreement of how much I pay them, and I don't pay them for a link. I pay them because I'm telling them I need them to write an article that will inspire a click. And the link has to be obvious. It has to be supremely clickable because of the reasonable surfer model. So if it's not extremely visible, like underlined, bold, and different color, and your article around it not only contextualizes the link, but also makes it encouraged the reader, makes it almost irresistible to click, then I don't want it. So everybody I work with understands that the reasonable surfer model means that for them to have any value to me, they have to be writing articles that create that value in a respective niche. So I needed to be in a niche that makes sense. I'll also work with a survey company or something like that to do proper research. Or if the client has their own data, we'll use that. But you want to work with YouGov, Ipsos Mori, or something like that, not fucking SurveyMonkey, because that's never going to get journalistic any attention. If you don't need that tier of link building, like you're not Casino Pharma, whatever, really, really hotly contentious, then don't bother with that. You can use SurveyMonkey. But if you're wanting to get the attention of journalists, you need like Ipsos Mori or YouGov. So I'll do that. But in order to hide the links I'm buying, because I'm buying links, we all buy links. But as I said, I'm buying them from bloggers who are going to actually do something for me in making the link click worthy. Then I'll use the journalists, that top layer of journalists, to create the initial buzz. Then underneath that layer is my purchased links, because those are higher quality because I work with these people regularly. Then underneath that is going to be certain other purchased placements, shall we say? And interestingly, I will also pay for PPC to the paid bloggers, to the press, and to the client. So I've got 3 tiers of types of paid ads that I will screw around with as well. So I've got a lot of personas that have their own identities, and they might have their own credit cards.
Who would do
nothing
such
illegal?
Thing, Judith? Come on.
Nothing tremendously elite.
Here's a question. I've got one question on that. Now, I'd be curious to know, is any of your other personas friends with me on Facebook?
I don't think so. I'd need to double check that, because most of my personas don't actually overlap with my account at all. So none of them are my friend. They have all friended other people. And it shocks me sometimes how readily complete strangers will friend another person on Facebook. And I'm like, why have you accepted this friend request? Are you insane? I've taken this photo off of like a Google search for a name. So I use a random name generator to create a name, go to Google, do a search for that name, scroll down, find a picture with 2 or 3 or 5 people in it. Pick one of those people, as long as the name hasn't surfaced a lot of selfies and face shots. Go down, find, oh God, I really shouldn't say this, should I? It's like a manual for how to be a fucking spammer. Go down, find a group of people, find all those faces, focus on the faces, use the faces to do Google searches again, find lots of similar looking faces, use those shots as your group, place them in a separate folder. That folder has the name of the persona. That persona then has a date of birth, a location, a name, a style of writing, an uncle, a dog or a cat, and all that sort of stuff. They have a place they live. They have a way that they talk. They have a time that they're on and offline. So none of the stuff where you need a separate laptop, but like, you know, there, that maybe you don't want to access it on your main laptop though, because, you know, Mac codes are traceable, but anyway. So you have these personas on like a separate, set of folders. I have a spreadsheet of everything, every email address they have, every security question they have, date of birth, everything. And you can create a persona that actually seems real. And I think, was it Ross who was saying that he had, or was it you that had a persona that they'd created that actually was being asked to appear on a TV show? So there are all sorts of people out there who have created personas that are very legitimate and lifelike. And, you know, with the prevalence of prepaid credit cards and things like that, you can actually separate accounts and everything. So you're making faces. I'm worried. Have I said too much?
No. Listen, I love it. I just never thought that you were as dodgy as that. You're just killing all this White Hat Judith stuff that I had in my head.
Be careful out there, kids, because you can be tracked back. So like, I was talking to a friend who said that she was doing reputation management for someone, and I said, so, you know, when you bought the separate laptop, had it been used before or not? And she was like, separate laptop. I was like, yeah, because, you know, you're counteracting this. This sounds like somebody who has a somewhat more than passing antagonistic nature towards this company. And she said, no. And I was like, well, how are you covering your trail? Because, you know, your laptop has certain attributes about it that it will be part of certain handshakes when you're communicating with other systems. And she was like, I made up another account. And I was like, no, man, no, this person looks like they're fucked, like they're hacked off, and they will track you down. Buy a separate laptop, only use it at the coffee shop. Just make sure that it never touches your home Wi-Fi or anything that you ever use for person. Don't fucking tether it to your phone. Go to a coffee shop, do all your shit there, and then just put a yellow sticky on it. And it has all the information about the personas that live on the laptop. And that's the laptop for those personas. You know, you can have more than one persona on a laptop. It doesn't have to be one per ID, unless you're doing really dodgy shit, in which case really you shouldn't be doing that, because that's probably illegal.
Yeah. No, that's the thing.
I tier everything. Everything has to be tiered. Because if you don't have multiple things going on at the same time, Google can see what a normal link acquisition pattern is. And if you're breaking that because you have a piece of news, that's fine. If you're breaking it fucking randomly, then Google will slap you down. Just, it'll suppress you. It'll suppress the value that those links bring. It won't penalize you, but they won't give you any value. So all that effort and work you just put in is just pissed away. So, you know, make the effort to make sure that the links you're building actually have value, and build other links to those bloggers as well. Every so often, if you've got a PBN, toss a reference to a blogger in a top 10 mummy bloggers that I read in this year, or whatever your PBN, one of your PBN sites is about. I was looking at one with like 11,000 sites in it. And I think I spoke about this on the other show. Was it like something about engineering, something about medicine, like Ayurvedic medicine, and then something about Irish music? And it was like really crazy divergent, but they had stupidly had the same AdSense ID on all of them. Don't do that, kids.
That's just rookie mistakes.
But that was a big network. I'm like, how did you fuck that up so badly, man?
Some people are crazy though. Yeah, it's madness. But on the fake persona thing, I want to touch a bit more on that. So you've got your fake personas, and they do, you know, your link acquisition, and, you know, you're just general fucking about stuff. But do you go, because I've had other guests on the show who literally have a phone for a fake persona, so they've got it in an iPhone, they do a lot of click-through rate manipulation, and they do a lot of other stuff with these personas. It's not just about buying a link, it's not just about outreach, they are doing all sorts of fuckery with these personas. So is your personas purely for link building, or do you, is there any other kind of leverage you can get out of them?
There's actually several things I use those personas for. I won't name them because that's probably just too much information. I've given you guys a lot. I don't want to give it all. And I think that some of the things that I use these personas for might be shocking to some. I know that there are very few people that are shocked by these things, but it might be. So I won't mention, but yeah, I have two other handsets. So some of the personas, maybe a small handful, less than a dozen, have an associated phone number and have an associated handset that has a phone number that's pay as you go. So it hides itself, and you've got the prepaid credit card, so you don't have to worry about topping up. So they do, but I'm not using those for click manipulation because I don't need to, because they're part of a much bigger ecosystem of things. And I don't want to risk tripping anything with those. So I'm perhaps a little safer with my personas than other people might be, because they're actually valuable to me. They have guest posting slots that are actually valuable. They have all sorts of things that actually generate value. So they're posting on real sites that have real value, and they deliver articles that have incredible value. I've never had to research so much about compostable toilets in my life, but you know, it's something that actually has value and helps people and ranks in and of itself. So why wouldn't you keep that going safely? And so then I'll just pay for services. So I'll buy shitty links. I've found a new place to buy shitty links from, so I'm going to test that out in a little while. And I'll buy all sorts of other things. So I'll use all of the arrows in my quiver in order to, on a big project, make something rank. But that's going to cost you like mid five figures.
Yeah.
So it's not cheap. And I think Ross was talking in the low to mid five figures as well, as far as what it would cost to get this kind of piece from him. So it's not inexpensive. It's only valuable if you actually get a lot of money out of it. I maintain them because I screw around with stuff all the time. But if I was maintaining this as a business and this was my full-time business, it's expensive because it's time consuming.
Yeah. And that's the pain in the ass about it, but it works. That's the other side of it as well, though. It works, and they are worth maintaining, in my opinion anyway. But so your personas basically have author accounts at certain places and all sorts of mad, crazy stuff like that. Now, I want to touch on a bit on Mass Planner, because we spoke about it before, or Jar V, as some people might want to call it now, or whatever. Do you use that level of automation to just keep the kind of followings and everything else for these personas going, or do you not bother? Like, has all your personas got like a Twitter and a Facebook and all that kind of stuff, or is it only a handful?
Only a handful have Twitter, because Twitter, I don't know, I just, at a certain point, you just sort of lose the will to live. But, you know, some of the personas do have automation on their Instagram. They've got good followings. One's closing in on 10,000 now. And that seems to be like a point at which things tip over into getting free stuff, which is always good. Another one is tipping into 5 grand. So that one is basically ego and nothing else. I don't even know why I did it. I think I was just sick of fashion bloggers. So I did like an old lady fashion blogger thing just for shits and giggles, because I'm always buying new lipstick. As you can see, this is a new color. And I do my nails and stuff like that. So I, you know, sometimes I look good, and most of the time I don't. Most of the time it's sweatshirts and sweatpants and whatnot. But I just did a pure ego play on one of my accounts, and that's approaching 5K. The other two are 31 and 33, I think, or 31 and 32K. One of them I do test tools that are used to assess accounts on. So I think the bigger one, maybe the smaller one, one of them I have maybe 40% purchased followers just because I want to test things and I want to see how things tip. So I've got purchased followers, purchased likes, purchased comments, purchased saves. So like people who like fake accounts that go on and save your post. And I think that's it. I think I kind of fully automated the, I haven't fully automated the posting that I still manually do from the desktop on the browser, but on the embed browser, but the everything else is pretty much fully automated, and then there's the exchanges and everything. So, but it's rocking and rolling forward pretty well. I get comments, I get people engaging with posts like normal human beings, not robots.
In terms of the browser stuff that you're using, are you using something like Ghost Browser to do that, or are you using something else?
I use the native. It's the native embed browser on the specific laptop that uses it. I'm being a little lazy because my face appears in the accounts. So I think all but one has my face in it. So they're all tied back to me by my face. Those Instagrams that I'm experimenting with right now aren't tied to the personas. If I was to do something tied to the personas, I'd pick up a second account and have that on a separate machine and have that like using the pay-as-you-go sims in order to connect. So I do automation and I do a lot of testing with automation, but I also, it's got my face in it. So I'm not using it for nefarious purposes. It's really just for shits and giggles and freebies, obviously.
I'd be curious to know, have you ever looked into the legalities of all of this stuff? Is this even legal to,
to
do?
So, yes, I have looked into the legalities of it. So there are laws about holding yourself out to be someone that you're not. And that is a risk. And especially, I don't have a bank account under any of those personas. So it's all pay as you go, top up credit cards that aren't tied to a bank account. And you have to be very careful about tying them to a name because you are misrepresenting yourself. Mm-hmm. And for certain things, misrepresenting yourself is a criminal offense and it does come with jail time. So you need to be really careful about what you're doing and why you're doing it. So as an author, if I was doing a tech blog and I was faking who I was, I would be very careful about ever using that persona that does a tech blog for anything, even on the line. Because if I want to use that persona to receive free tech, I cannot hold myself out to be anything other than a nom de plume. So I can have something like my face like this or something where you don't see my whole face. And that's my headshot for the publication. Or I could have like hiding through my fingers or whatever. It can be obscured in some way, but I have to claim that if anything happens as a nom de plume. And I can't have done anything that might in any way be used as proof that I'm using it as more than a nom de plume, but actually a fake identity. So yes, be very careful about this stuff. Don't hold yourself out to be this human being and be very careful about using people's images. You know, that is not technically allowed that you're misrepresenting someone with a different picture and things like that. Just be careful because you are about as close. I'm doing about as close to the legal edge of things as you can get without tipping over. And there are points when you will tip over and you need to be so careful about that. Otherwise, you know, it is criminal.
Yeah. And obviously it's not meant, it's just meant for gamifying the system, so to speak. Certainly from my point of view anyway, for the stuff I do, it's it's fun. It's quite cool to be someone else for a while as well.
Mostly I'm just other women. I'm often not a man, interestingly enough.
Question, are you what is the split of your personas? Like, my personas is 50-50, because obviously you can get, you know, a hot female to flirt for links or whatever. Just certain things work a lot better. But I was curious to know what your split is. Is it like 50-50 or is it primarily all females?
Really weirdly, it's about 80-20 females to males. I find that it's more difficult to get a response to a masculine male profile than a female profile. I do get hit on a lot. Like, you get random strange men with clearly fake pictures because I recognize where they pulled them from, hitting on you. You're like, you look at their Instagram, you're like, I know which, I know exactly where you got those photos from, man. So it's easier to be a hot girl, so to speak, than a hot guy. And yeah, I think that people respond better to hot women than hot men. Some of my favorite accounts on Instagram to pull followers from are fake hot women.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, I know someone will probably have something to say about that. That's bloody terrible saying that, but it's true. It's a fact of life, and that's all there is to it. But yeah, one last question on the fake personas. Have you ever, you know, been doing your stuff or exchanging links or just general fucking around and had someone from the industry chat you up or do anything on these fake personas?
No, I haven't. They're pretty low quality. They generally don't have the kind of personas that you would associate with anyone with a significant IQ. So they've not been seen as possible digital marketers. They're just, you know, mums or sisters or wives type thing. Some of them are single, some of them are married, but unhappily, of course. They're always unhappily married. But they're generally low threat and not really attractive as a target by anybody in the industry, at least to this point. Somebody may now go out and try to find a footprint of my personas. And I won't say what hair color they, I do tend to choose a particular hair color as well, interestingly. But I won't say that, but they haven't been hit up by anybody asking to join like a network or use their blog to do something. They also, they don't have self-hosted blogs, right? Because mm-hmm. I get fucking lazy. We all get lazy. I don't need to do this for a day job. So they have like Blogspot stuff. It's not really sophisticated. So they're not a good target for a link builder.
Yeah. I'm just curious if Jerry White or something had jumped on and tried to take one of your personas out on a date. I've got to be on a show sometime soon, but I think you were there actually. We were in Portugal last year with Semrush? And Lisbon. We were drunk at the bar and we were allowed to play with Jerry's Tinder, which was a whole lot of fun. Me, Jerry, and Nick Wilson, I think, were last in the bar, just drinking that last pint, just, and it was fucking brilliant. So it was. It was. I've been with my wife for 17 years, so I don't normally get to play in these things, but it was a whole lot of fun being in that bar, just going loose on Jerry's profile, hammering everyone with all sorts of obscene messages, but that was a lot of fun.
I actually did that with a guy once. I took his Tinder account and I just started swiping, made some matches. I sent, I thought, pretty reasonable messages and they responded. So I started him off well, but because he wasn't actually interested in dating anyone, he didn't pursue it. But it was fun. I felt badly for the women if they were real. Because that's another thing, right? I've developed so many personas. I have a healthy disrespect for those types of systems.
Yeah. You've got to. But on that note, we will wrap up because I don't want to waste a whole bunch of your day. But I think we could talk for hours and hours and hours about all the kind of dirty things that you get up to. But you've dropped a lot of knowledge today and obviously a lot of some of the kind of devious stuff that people love hearing about, which
just be really careful. Just like totally caveat this beforehand and after. Like, there are so many things that will tip you into criminal activity that you might not realize. So please be really careful. Don't use your personas for harassment. Don't use your personas for stalking. Don't use your personas for any criminal activity. Because remember, this is a commercial investment. So you're investing your time is money. If you're investing in these personas as a commercial investment, don't fuck them up by being an asshole. Just keep them clean.
On that note, by the way, one final thing, just a blanket figure. So you've invested time, money, prepaid cards and all that for your personas. What is your personas worth to you? Like, in terms of monetary value, in terms of time went in building that stuff up, payments for, you know, whatever the hell you've done, like,
yeah,
tens of thousands of pounds.
I'm afraid, yeah, it's in the multiples of tens, because it's been time, right? So it's 8 years in some cases or more of time invested. And I dumped my little blue book. So before this, I was a heavy spammer. So, you know, I won't get into it because it's a long story of my origins, but you said I started speaking in 2007. I used a magician's trick to distract people from my shitty, spammy back link. Well, not links at that time. It was much more spam in email form and like forum posts and shit like that. But forum posts, links. So, but like I had to distract from all of that because there was a massive footprint and I had changed ISP providers to try to cover it up. So in 2007, I did a massive cleanup of everything that I'd had before and dumped my little blue book. But my little blue book was basically my spreadsheet is now, was huge numbers of personas. So, you know, 13 years ago, I dumped a ton that I now regret having dumped. But there were a ton with age and like personalities and presence, and they posted and looked completely legit, and I had to dump them because there was just too much that tied them back to me.
Yeah. Ah, that's a shame. But you still just kept them for shits and giggles. Went asleep.
Well, that was for commercial purposes.
Yeah. But it's amazing the lengths some people will go to in this industry. Nothing surprises me anymore. Someone with personas that are older than some people's experience in the industry is just obscene, but all good stories. They do make for good stories, and that's why I always love talking to you. But for anyone who does want to maybe reach out to you for consultancy or consultancy on building personas,
white cat consultancy. I don't think I would never give consultancy on building the personas the way I've done them, because I think that it's too dangerous. I think in the wrong hands, they can be used for bad rather than good or neutral. Like, I consider myself chaotic neutral. I wouldn't want to enable somebody to be, you know, chaotic evil. And it's I would never do consulting on building personas. But if people want white hat corporate friendly consulting from me, they can find me on the internet at decabit.com, which is DECABBIT, which, you know, but if you look up Judith Lewis and chocolate or Judith Lewis SEO or anything like that, it should hopefully come up. I don't think it's been penalized yet. Or Twitter, reach out to me on Twitter and ask me questions. I'm also on LinkedIn. I actually have the Judith Lewis on LinkedIn. So
she is everywhere. And if you do somehow struggle to find her, just give me a nudge and I'll introduce you guys, but I'm sure they will have absolutely no trouble at all in finding you. You're terrorizing someone somewhere.
That scary lady.
But thank you very much for coming on, Judith. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. It was lots of fun. And just remember, kids, stay safe.
Cheers.